City, Jimi Hendrix, considered to be, by many, the greatest guitarist of all time, said famously that sometimes you want to give up the guitar. You hate the guitar. But if you stick with it, you're going to be rewarded. That's proof positive that guitarists everywhere who stick with it find rewards of their own. This is Central Standard. I'm Jabalani LaFall. And our guest today is a self-taught guitarist who's found some rewards of his own, singer-songwriter Sterling Witt. He's performing at the Uptown Arts Bar on November 24th, and his new album is called Red Cloud. Sterling Witt, welcome to the show.
All right. This is a bad way to start, but my new album is titled Sterling Loves You.
Sterling Loves You. Red Cloud was the previous one.
Red Cloud, I'm not sure where you got that, frankly, because it's the title of a song, but it's on a couple albums ago.
You should go with that.
Red Cloud, yeah.
Red Cloud.
I think
Red
that
Cloud.
Has something to do with the pitch.
The album, yes.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Yes. And we'll get to the pitch and your love-hate relationship with them. But first, let's start with, when did you first pick up a guitar?
I was 15 when I played the bass guitar. And
you just picked it up and started playing?
Well, I had a right-handed instrument, and I didn't have a teacher. So I tried to play it right-handed. I knew that it was just a right-handed thing, and it did not work. I felt wrong. It felt like if you were writing with your other hand, whatever you are. And so I just flipped it upside down, and that really worked for me. It felt natural, and it made a lot more sense to me, actually. And just figuring it out, it came very easily.
It came easily. How did you teach yourself how to play?
Well, diligence. I have a lot of persistence in my blood. Difficult things. Everything is difficult, seems like. And so I grew up with a lot of learning disabilities, and I didn't really, life was just hard. So playing the guitar upside down was just another one of those things.
It's just another one of those things that sort of came in the
process.
Well,
you know, my youth was kind of like getting punched in the face a few times, you know, and after you do it a few times, you kind of get used to it being hard. And so playing the guitar in a demented way or a difficult way, it didn't seem difficult. It just seemed like the rest of things, you know?
So you went outside and asked people to punch you in the face, and that helped you play guitar better.
Well, that's one way of looking at it.
How difficult is it for you to look at what a right-handed player... You're left-handed.
Yeah, I'm left-handed.
So what? How difficult is it for you to look at what a right-handed player is doing and translate that to upside down or backwards?
It's not so hard for me because I've been doing it my whole life. It's really difficult for them to put up with me. So when I work with somebody, they really got to do their homework.
So the upside down, backwards, bottoms up approach to your guitar playing was not something that sort of derived from you standing in the mirror, rocking out, playing your routine, but literally from how you learned.
Pretty much just ignorance. I didn't know any better, and it was what I had around.
You said that your playing style means that you don't take part in jam sessions, but how does it affect your recording sessions when other musicians are involved and they're seeing this weird playing?
Well, let me put it this way. On my most recent record, there's two people that play on it. There's a drummer and there's me. And I play the bass lines on it as well. So I keep it as simple as I can. And when I am in a situation, performing or whatever, there is serious rehearsal involved, and people who play with me want to play with me, and they have to figure it out because there's no easy way of doing it.
What do people say when they see you playing in your unorthodox style? And
it's always a surprise, of course, and they, they get used to it or they don't.
Do you tell people either get used to it or you don't, or punch me in the face and I'll play guitar better?
Well, the problem is I'm very stubborn and I pretty much just do what I do. So people got to put up with me.
Tell us about your newest release, Sterling Loves You.
Thank you. Well, we recorded it at a place called the Infoaming Vortex in Gladstone, Missouri. And we recorded it, mixed and mastered and everything, in a matter of 23 hours over the span of 6 days. And they're all one takes, and I'm really happy with it.
So you fit 23 hours into 6 days?
Well, we broke it up. We broke up one day into 6 days. 5 hours the first day, 4 hours the second, like that.
Why do you call it Sterling Loves You? Are you talking to one person in particular?
No, I'm talking to the human race because there's this really distortion on this planet, so to speak, to where people do not relate to each other anymore, and we're all human. And so we, at some point in the evolution of things, we have to come to the realization that we have to love each other.
And you whisper it to them.
Well, you kind of got to whisper it to them because it's foreign language at first, because most people aren't used to that sort of thing.
Why do you think the world is that way or has evolved to a way where we're not connected?
Well, I think there's many reasons, and it's probably take a lot more time than we have today. However, I think you start out with the wrong information sometimes in life. For most people, I think this is true. They tell you 2 and 2 equals 5 from the time you're born.
You mean it doesn't?
Yeah, so you go your whole life thinking 2 and 2 equals 5, 2 and 2 equals 5. And then one day when you're 34 years old, somebody who seems totally insane tells you the truth. And that is disturbing because you come to the realization you've been thinking and believing something your entire life that is actually not true.
You just blew my mind. I'm sitting here thinking that it equaled 5, and now that explains my finances.
That can be a problem.
We brought a couple of tracks from your album, Sterling Loves You, to play for our listeners. What's the first one we're going to hear? Perfect Girl. Tell us about the origins of Perfect Girl.
Perfect Girl was me doing the best in my ability to manifest the perfect girl in my life. And so I figured I needed to be thinking about her, whoever she is. And so I decided, well, in order to think about her, I have to write a song about her, because that means I'll be thinking about it a lot, because I've got to make this song, and that takes time.
Trying to speak the perfect girl into existence, in other words.
Exactly. And so I did that.
You did that?
Well, yeah, actually, I did that.
You did?
Yeah.
So the perfect girl has came into existence as a result of the song?
Weirdly, yes.
All right, let's hear Perfect Girl by Sterling Whitt.
She has to be fireproof, you see, in order to be good enough for me, with eyes that mesmerize, a superhuman in disguise. She's a perfect girl, perfect for me. She's a perfect girl, perfect for me. She's smart, funny, beautiful, intelligent. Everything she ever says is so relevant. She looks so good, she looks so fine. It won't be long before the girl is mine. She's a perfect girl, perfect to me. She's a perfect girl, perfect to me. She's magnificent. Every single way, shape, and form. She defied logic the day she was born. She's really old-fashioned, futuristic. Thrives on fantasy, and somehow she's still realistic. She's a perfect girl, perfect for me. She's a perfect girl, perfect for me.
That was a snippet of Perfect Girl from Sterling Whitt's CD titled Sterling Loves You. Our guest is singer-songwriter Sterling Whitt. He's performing at the Uptown Arts Bar at 9 p.m. on November 24th. You are listening to Central Standard on 89.3 FM KCUR, streaming live on KCUR.org. I'm Jabalani LaFall. Sterling, you're known for writing very unusual love songs. Tell us about your approach to the love songs, Perfect Girl and Etc.
Well, Okay. I write from my life, is what I would say. And I do that in whatever, love song, breakup song, political song. And my beliefs, my thoughts, my feelings, everything goes into the music. So it's really a manifestation of me, literally. So I don't make stuff up, as far as I'm concerned. It's real, and it's very real to me.
A minute ago, you separated love song from breakup song. Is there a difference?
Well, one involves love.
What do you like to do the most, live performance or the solitary process of writing and composing?
The solitary process of writing and composing comes naturally to me. Performing was a learned skill that I forced myself to go out into the world and perform. So they're very different. However, I've come to love performing very much, and it's I have a lot of fun with it now.
What were your earliest sort of lyrical inspirations that inspired you to write?
Like who?
Who?
People.
And what?
Well, you know, I spent a lot of time as a kid, you know, just playing in the yard, you know, with a spoon, you know, and digging in the dirt. So I didn't have a lot of musical influence as a kid. I would turn on the radio, I heard country music generally. I heard Neil Diamond a lot. And that stuff was like embedded in my blood. When I was a kid, I grew up on 90s rock. And, you know, there was like a lot of affection for that really powerful, emotional, angry music from 90s that was kind of embedded in my blood, too. And so people, it's funny, when you say a person's name, people will tie it to it. So I don't know that I want to do that because I don't listen to that music anymore. And it really has nothing to do with me anymore, although it maybe shaped me at the time. I'll give you one because it's a very important one. Nirvana.
Right, right. And you said a minute ago that this sort of angry music, this grunge rock of the 90s that Nirvana was tied to and credited with sort of birthing into the mainstream movement was in your blood a little bit.
Absolutely.
Let's talk about a bit how you handled criticism after the pitch panned one of your CDs. You showed up outside of the offices and gave an impromptu performance. What was that about?
Well, I'm an artist, and my job as an artist, the way I see it, is to create art out of every aspect of my life. And I saw an opportunity, and I took it. I feel like, at the time, I felt like sitting on that review and just ignoring it, well, it didn't feel good, and I felt like I could make something out of this. And that's my job, is to make something out of everything. And to make something work for me that theoretically shouldn't was a little game for myself that I played. And if you think it didn't work, let me put it this way. The pitch wrote like a handful of articles about me, all negative. 5 years later, we're talking about it. Nobody talks about the beautiful review I got in the Kansas City Star by Tim Finn. But we like to talk about the negative stuff.
Yeah, the disdain probably lasts longer. And
absolutely.
Tell us about the day you went out and did the sort of protest performance. How did that go? How did you set that up?
Well, I set it up like a show, and I invited people. I put it on my tour schedule. I'm going to be here, whether you are or not, because I believe in my music, and this is what I'm doing. So you're supporting me or you're not. You're either in or you're out.
That sounds very mafia, Sterling Witt.
Very mafia. I am kind indeed. Of mafia in a way.
We're talking about the musical mafia of Sterling Witt and his passion for music. He's a singer, songwriter, and a self-taught guitarist. You recorded a set of videos from various landmarks. Name some of the places where you recorded these videos, and what was the thought behind that video series?
Well, one of the places I recorded was the Georgia Guidestones, which is in Georgia, out in the middle of nowhere. I recorded a song called Hollow Moon there. And if you haven't read the Georgia Guidestones, I recommend it. It's interesting, enlightening, and a little eerie because of some of the information that is stated on there.
Well, give us a cliff notes, if you will. That's a double entendre.
Well, how about the most disturbing one? It says that planet Earth basically should maintain a population of 500 million people. And if you didn't know, there's 7 billion plus. So what does this mean? Mm-hmm. I have no idea.
We're rapidly approaching that number here in this country alone as well.
Right. So what does that mean? I don't know what it means, but the history of the Georgia Guidestones, how they came into existence, who's involved, it's weird. There's also a camera on the Georgia Guidestones filming them 24 hours a day.
You sounded like an eerie narrator for a conspiratorial documentary there.
Well, I like Alfred Hitchcock.
Does Alfred Hitchcock inspire your musical?
Oh, yeah. I mean, how could he not? I mean, it's just a wonderful filmmaker.
You've moved on to record again. You mentioned the song Hollow Moon. Where does the inspiration come from for that? What was the impetus for that song?
We touched on this earlier. When you get into a situation, we'll call it life for now, and you start believing something that isn't true, you think it's true. Your friends think it's true. Your parents think it's true. You think all this stuff is true. And at some point, you become at a crossroads because there's something. Something has been presented to you that is in conflict with what you believe. And so this is kind of a manifestation of the dishonesty in the world, that there is maybe a Wizard of Oz, so to speak, that is misleading.
In Kansas?
People. I don't know if he lives in Kansas, but I think he's out there.
What are the lyrics of the song Hollow Moon? What should we be focusing on as we prepare to listen?
Well, there's a lot of things to talk about, but the most obvious thing I'm talking about is I say hollow moon, hollow earth. I mean those things literally, is what I would say, and I'm not speaking an artistic tongue there. That is very much, I'm talking about the possibility that the moon is different than scientists say it is. I'm talking about the fact that maybe earth is different than we think it is, and if you... That rubs you the wrong way, I understand, because in your science book, they got the Earth cut open, and we see the core, we see the mantle, and we've been to the moon. I know all that stuff. Forget about it. Maybe it's not true.
So your music attempts to speak truth to power as you see it, sort of bring honesty to a dishonest world. Sort of lofty goal, but is that your intention?
Well, yeah, and I think that, as a person... Who wouldn't want that? I'm not saying I'm right, but I am saying I'm doing the best I can.
Let's listen to Hollow Moon from Sterling Witt.
It's all a twisted joke. Hollow moon, hollow earth. Who knows what the truth is worth? Answer solutions and New Year's resolutions. We are come to our own conclusions. Where are we going? Where have we been? What's your definition of heaven, hell, or sin? Some say it's this, others say it's that. How the hell do you keep track of where you're at? And what in God's name is going on anymore? Some say it's peace, others say it's war. Floating in a dust storm, dancing in a hurricane. What again was it? You don't recall her name. Katrina controversy, a harp at her mercy. How blind can you be to believe we are free? Oh. Hate to break the news. Hollow moon, hollow earth. Who knows what the truth is worth? Answer solutions.
That's Hollow Moon from Sterling Witt's new CD titled Sterling Loves You. Our guest is singer-songwriter Sterling Witt. He's performing at the Uptown Arts Bar on November 24th at 9 p.m. His new CD, once again, is called Sterling Loves You. What we just heard with Hollow Moon, do you write your stuff down first in lyric form, or do you compose first, or does it mix depending on what your mood is?
Well, there's no hard and fast rules, but generally speaking, I compile the lyrics and the words separately. There's like an ongoing log of this, and I'm always recording either into something, into a recording device, driving down the road, or I'm writing it down profusely. I have notebooks everywhere.
You're going to be traveling a lot soon. Tell us some of the places you're going.
Well, first of all, we're headed to the northeast, like places between here and Seattle and Canada, and then all the way down the west coast, and then across the southwest, and then back up to Kansas City is the first plan.
What do you feel about being a musician in Kansas City? This is a place where people do it. They don't talk it, they do it. How does it feel to be a Kansas City area musician?
Well, you know, it's interesting because I feel like Kansas City in general, it's not that it's not a part of my life. It's just like this is a town. This is a good town. I live here. And I travel all over the place. And it's it is about doing it. It's not about being a part of a scene or playing a certain club. I played in a cemetery. I played on the courthouse steps. I played on the street outside the pitch. It has nothing to do with a scene. It has to do with your art and what you're doing with it. And that's what Kansas City means to me, is that it's the people and the art is what make up the town. It doesn't matter what club you're hanging out in.
So it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. Or not where you're at, it's what you're doing.
It's almost like the people make up the town, and if you got a town full of lame people who aren't doing anything interesting, then you got a lame town, unfortunately.
Yeah, pretty much.
So the people, I urge you to be interesting, because we make up the town. We are the town.
Talk about your paintings.
Paintings.
What do you get out of your paintings that you don't get out of music, or that you can see as an outlet that music doesn't necessarily placate you?
Well, I was a visual artist when I was very young. I was creating at a very early age, drawing and painting as soon as I got my hands on whatever I could paint with. And it's a very natural thing for me to be constantly creating something. And I don't know what it is about painting that music doesn't do. They're different. I'm an explorer, is what I would say. And I'm always reaching out in a new way, attacking things in a new way, searching for a new way to express myself. And the paintings, this is very... it's just very personal. It's kind of like breathing for me. It's like I need to do it to feel sane, you know. And because I'm on this planet, I make a living doing it. But I'm not sure that I would do that in like some perfect world, you know, because it's such a – it's just who I am.
They're personal, yet you exhibit them as you exhibit your music. You exhibit
your paintings as you exhibit your music. Because you have to make a living, and I got to go to the grocery store, and, you know, everybody needs a paycheck. But that's because we live in this world where that's the reality. That's the reality of life. So I'd rather make a job out of my art and music than be flipping burgers somewhere, which I've done many times.
At the end of the day, Sterling, what do you want to accomplish? What do you want Sterling Witt to be perceived as when it's all said and done? He says with a breath.
I'm an artist. And my goal is to create something real. And my goal as a person is to discover truth whatever it is. So when you come into my world and you want to delve into my music or my art, that's what you're getting into. It's not for everybody. It's certainly not for everybody. But it might be for you. And if it is, we're friends now.
So mainly, are you saying you just want to tell the truth as you discover
it? Discover it and then pass it along. Because I'm very thankful for the people I think that I've discovered who are telling the truth that I've come to, that have come to me in my life in some way or another and gave me this information on multiple accounts. And it's an ongoing thing. It isn't like, oh, I know the truth because so-and-so said this. It's like an ongoing process that you're always in.
Our guest is singer-songwriter Sterling Witt. He's performing at the Uptown Arts Bar on November 24th at 9 p.m. His new CD is titled Sterling Loves You. Sterling Witt, thank you for coming.
Thank you.